Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Slash Film Daily. Today is Friday, April 5th, 2024. On today's episode of the show, we're going to be talking about the Omen movie franchise and Arkasha Stevenson's new film, The First Omen. My name is Ben Pearson. I am an editor at slashfilm.com, and I'm joined on today's episode by Slash Film editor BJ Colangelo.
Hi.
BJ, I noticed that you sound slightly different today. Tell me where you are. What are you doing?
I am recording from my hotel room at the Overlook Film Festival in New Orleans, Louisiana, and I had the travel day from hell yesterday, so I do not have my microphone or my headphones, so we're having a good time here.
Well, I appreciate you making time in the middle of a presumably pretty busy stretch for you to talk about The Omen and this new movie, The First Omen, that is in theaters right now. Full disclosure, I planned on seeing this movie so I could talk to you about it today, and I just did not have the ability to do that. I've been going through some stuff. I've been spending a lot of time in the hospital, actually. My wife is there right now still. She's been there for several days. Everything seems to be on the up and up, but I'll probably talk about that more detailed maybe next week or something in like a water cooler if we do that. But suffice it to say, it's been a whole thing. And and so I have not had the time to like go out and see movies like I normally would. So anyway, I guess I in lieu of me being able to add anything significant to this conversation, BJ, I was hoping you could walk me through your thoughts on the Omen franchise as a whole. This is a franchise that I am utterly unfamiliar with. I missed out on the first, the original Omen. And it was going to be something that I tried to catch up with in advance of seeing this prequel film. Obviously, my plans were thrown into chaos. But what do you think about the Omen franchise as a whole?
So the first Omen movie, the OG Omen, I guess is how we'll refer to it to not have so much confusion. But OG Omen is one of my favorite films of all time. I watched this movie way too young, but I feel like that's my story with most classic horror movies. But I watched this as a kid, and within the realm of these like religious satanic horror movies from the 70s, you know, The Exorcist, Rosemary's Baby are the other two big ones from this category. The Omen was my first favorite, probably because it's the one that I saw first, but also because I love how matter of fact this movie is. It's about the Antichrist. Like, there's no bones about it. There's no sort of like cutesy mystery surrounding it. It's, well, Gregory Peck is raising the Antichrist. Isn't that wild? And so I really like that. And I love how there is a little bit of like pulpy sleaze to the original Omen, which makes it a really fun movie to rewatch. As for the rest of the franchise, I can give or take it. None of them hit the highs for me quite like OG Omen does. There's also some weird timeline stuff because in the third movie, which it was released sometime in the 80s, suddenly Damien, who was five, is now full-grown man Sam Neill. It doesn't fully make sense in that regard. But I was so dazzled by the first Omen that, not to say we are so back, but we are so back.
Excellent. Okay, so I have a couple points to make here. So the original Omen came out in 1976. A couple years later, Damien: Omen 2 came out. And then in 1981, Omen 3, The Final Conflict came out. That's the one you're talking about with Sam Neill. That was, 81. And then 10 years later, Omen 4, The Awakening, I believe was released direct to, it was a TV movie, so it came out on Fox is what I can understand. And then in 2006, there was a remake of the original film. And then now, almost 20 years later, is The First Omen, a prequel to the original that goes all the way back in the timeline. One thing that when you were talking about your relationship to the franchise that I had a question about, BJ, is like, was there an aspirational quality to The Omen for you? Because you saw it so young, and it's about a kid who is the Antichrist. Were you like, oh man, this kid's like misbehaving, and I would love, to be like, it was like a Dennis the Menace type of vibe. Is that what drew you to it at all?
There's okay. So I actually just talked about this on my podcast, This Isn't Prom, with The Crush, which is an Alicia Silverstone movie where she's a 14-year-old who totally ruins Carrie Elwes's life. And that was absolutely an aspirational thing for me, is I loved watching kids just mess things up. And the fact that, you know, Damien is in this family with an American diplomat, so he's also messing up things for like a government official. Like, that's great. That's some good fantasy booking for a child.
Awesome. Okay. So yeah, give me your spoiler-free thoughts about The First Omen, and then we'll get into more spoiler-heavy stuff after that. But I want to at least carve out some space for people who haven't seen the movie yet, just to sort of get a sense about what you think about it and whether or not it might be worth their time.
So I will preface this by saying, I know that right now, Hollywood and the filmmaking landscape in general is just inundated with, how can we make a remake or a sequel or a prequel or a reboot or whatever with some recognizable name brand thing? Let's just mine through all of our IP. And the results have been mixed to bad, overwhelmingly. So I totally get why there's probably a lot of people thinking, ugh, The First Omen, who asked for this? Because that was my initial thought as well. I'll fully admit, I got to go to the premiere, and they had, you know, confessional booths set up, and there were creepy nuns everywhere. They had the costumes on display, and I was like, all right, they're really trying to, like, talk this up so that people know that this is a little bit more than just, you know, shameless mining through IP. I was wrong. I was so wrong. The First Omen goes so hard. It is amazingly fun. It is genuinely scary. And I love that it is a movie that could on its own exist as its own story. It deals with a young nun named Margaret. This is the story about how, you know, Damien came to be. But if you didn't see OG Omen, like, you're not going to be missing anything. It definitely enhances your experience because there's a lot of little things sprinkled throughout. But you don't have to have seen any Omen movies to enjoy The First Omen, because it leads you right into the original Omen. It dovetails into it perfectly. But this movie goes shockingly hard in ways that I have not seen in a studio produced, like a big studio produced horror film, in a very long time.
So I was going to ask you how this compares to other nun-centric horror movies that have come out recently, because there seems to be, I mean, you've got the Nun franchise that was a spinoff of The Conjuring, and then obviously Immaculate is the Sydney Sweeney movie that just came out, what, a week or two ago, and is also a scary movie involving nuns. So I was wondering if you, like, how would you place this movie in that context in terms of, like, comparing them? I mean, I know you've said this movie goes hard a couple times. Like, is this more intense, more extreme than those other films? Like, how would you sort of situate that in people's minds?
So this movie goes exponentially harder than the Nun franchise does, but it's also a very different movie. The Nun franchise is very much supernatural, and a character just sort of happens to be a nun. The First Omen is far more in line with Immaculate, especially thematically. Both stories are telling, you know, cautionary tales about women's autonomy. They both deal with, you know, weird demon pregnancy type things. So they definitely have more in common. I think that these two movies coming out at the same time is brilliant for both of them, because now you have an incredible double feature where you have two movies where the third act is shockingly awesome, incredibly violent, and both movies have absolutely fearless performances. Both Sydney Sweeney and Nell Tiger-Free in The First Omen are out of this world good at what they're doing and commit in ways that we haven't seen in horror in a very long time. And it's so refreshing to have these just powerhouse horror performances in movies that aren't slasher films. So they're not following, like, the final girl tropes. Like, it's something totally different. They are in such command of their movies. So I do think that Immaculate and The First Omen play really well together, but in terms of comparative, they're just taking very different approaches. Immaculate is a little bit slower in terms of its build toward its third act, whereas The First Omen kind of comes out the gate swinging and doesn't let up.
Awesome. Okay. Man, I'm so excited to see both of these movies. I hope that everything is okay in time for me to be able to go and check out that double feature, like you said, because I haven't had a chance to see Immaculate yet either. But okay, I guess I'm trying to think if there's anything else I can ask you about this before we really get into like spoilery stuff. I guess I'll just throw it to you. Is there anything that you want to say that isn't spoilers to sort of transition into that section of the show here?
Something that I found really fascinating with this that is not spoilery is that the first Omen does include the character of Father Brennan, who people, if you've seen the OG Omen, know that is the priest in OG Omen who unfortunately does not make it out of that movie alive. So this is a really interesting inclusion of him being here a little bit younger, but not by much, but he is a little bit younger, and seeing how hard his dedication has been, because by the time we meet him in OG Omen, he does seem a little bit like a basket case because he's just like, ah, Mr. Thorne, your child, he is the devil. And you're like, all right, creepy old priest, what are you doing? But in this movie, you see kind of where that started. And I found that to be very interesting because he's a main character, but he's not the main character. And I feel like another version of this prequel, it would just be a Father Brennan movie. And the fact it's not, I think, is the smartest decision that they could have made.
Awesome. Yeah, so you had a chance to interview Arkasha Stevenson, the director, and Tim Smith, who is the producer, and the two of them also co-wrote this movie as well. And I remember I just edited the written version of that interview, and I remember you talking to them about that. So people are about to hear a little bit more about that in just a couple minutes when we play the full interview. But one thing that I was thinking about sort of as I've been having this conversation with you is I talked to you recently on an episode of The Water Cooler where we were talking about my first viewing of Ken Russell's The Devils and how that movie is also another sort of nun-centric film that is about power and control and institutions and manipulation and things like that. And reading the written version of the interview that folks are about to hear in just a minute, it sounds like maybe the first Omen shares a little bit of DNA with The Devils in that way too. Was that a comparison rather that came to your mind at all while you were watching it? Or is that just me trying to read into something without having seen this movie yet?
So what's funny is that I actually wore my Ken Russell's The Devils shirt when I conducted this interview, and it's not in the interview that people will hear because it happened before off mic, but they did comment on it. They're like, oh my God, what a great shirt. And I love that they noticed it because they immediately were like, that is such a sacred film. So I think like The Devils is untouchable. Like nothing is ever going to reach those heights. And I think if anyone even tries, that's a fool's errand because you just can't. And I think that they knew that going into it. So they're like, we're not even going to try to go into that realm because nobody can. It's already been done and it's perfect. Let's just let it be. And I will say I've also, you know, talked with some of the folks who worked on Immaculate as well. And they also feel very similarly, where I love that both of the creative teams that made these nunsploitation films, and I do think that both Immaculate and The First Omen are nunsploitation films for a modern audience because, you know, yes, they're not fully the definition of nunsploitation in terms of sexuality, but we're a lot more comfortable with sexuality these days. So that definition has to evolve with the times. So I definitely think these are modern nunsploitation films. But I do love that both creative teams were like, no, we've seen The Devils and it kicks ass. We can't touch that and we're not going to try because then we're going to fall on our face.
Okay. All right. So now I'm going to sound the metaphorical spoiler gong here. And if you've not seen this movie yet, click away, pause, come back and check it out. All right. So BJ, anything that you wanted to say, I mean, you don't have to go deep here, but just any spoilery thoughts that you wanted to offer about this movie and your experience watching it and sort of how you are thinking about this movie as it heads out into wide release right now.
The main one is that this is a 20th Century Studios movie, which means this is under the Disney umbrella, and you fully see a demon arm climb out of a vagina in this movie. That is the big one for me.
So yeah, not exactly a typical Disney fare then.
No, like not even close. And that is like, that's not like the end of the movie. There's been a lot of talk about how that scene, we do talk about it in the interview about the NC-17 rating. That scene takes place like 25 minutes into this movie.
Oh, wow. Okay, man. Yeah, that is, that's quite something. Okay. Yeah. Just reading the interview, and not having seen the film, I was like, oh, that's gotta be the climax. Like, you know, where else can it go from there? But it sounds like it definitely has places to go beyond that.
Definitely. And I mean, you know, because we're in the spoiler territory, we do see how Damien was made, and you see the penis of the jackal, like the terrifying, you know, demon monster. You see that. You see what is, in my opinion, the most terrifying involuntary C-section scene I have seen in a very long time. But it also, like, this movie is so good at being authentic. It's not trying to paint pregnancy or, you know, a cis woman's body as like disgusting or a vessel for horror. It's treating the people who force this upon people. That's the true horror. The horror is not pregnancy. The horror is not C-section. The horror is not having an option where somebody is going to take over your body and make you carry something that you don't want to have, and then they're going to violently rip it from you and there's nothing you can do about it. It is so upsetting to watch in like the best way possible.
Okay, yeah, let's take a break and then we'll be right back.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, excursions, and more in one place. There are over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from, so you can find something for everyone. And Viator offers free cancellation and 24/7 customer support for worry-free travel. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
All right, so man, just like hearing you describe the movie like that, BJ, kind of gave me chills. Like it sounds so tied to what is happening in our culture right now. And even though this movie is a prequel and takes place in the 70s, that it just seems so equipped to speak to what audiences are experiencing in 2024. And I know that's something that you spoke with Arkasha Stevenson and Tim Smith about in the interview that we're about to play. Anything else that you wanted to mention, I guess, just in terms of like setup before we play that interview?
Definitely. And I something that I want people to know is that the horror also is, there's so much more beyond just the pregnancy horror or the satanic horror. There is a character that our main nun Margaret meets that is not part of the church, not part of the convent. And all I will say is, if you were ever wondering what it looks like in that scene from Signs where Mel Gibson's wife is pinned to a tree and like the second they move that car, that's going to be a bad thing for her. Good news, you can now see what that looks like. And it is that bisection. Oh my God, the entire audience was just screaming like, I can't believe they just showed that. Yeah, this movie's nuts.
Okay. All right. So here is BJ's interview with Arkasha Stevenson and Tim Smith.
So hello, my name is BJ Colangelo. I am coming to you from Slash Film today. And just so our listeners can hear which voice belongs to which person, could you both introduce yourselves?
Yeah. Hey, I'm Arkasha. I'm the director of The First Omen.
And I'm Tim. I'm a co-writer and EP on the movie.
Fantastic. So over the years, I've spoken to countless folks in the horror sphere, and many of us have stories watching The Omen probably too young, but I think we all turned out fine. So what are both of your relationships with the original Omen?
Yeah, well, then when I was a kid, A&E had this double feature on Valentine's Day, which I thought was super appropriate. It was The Exorcist and The Shining. I was obsessed with it. And so my mom was like, oh, if you like those movies, you should watch this. And then she showed me The Omen. And I was already in love with Gregory Peck at such an early age. So yeah, I was 7 and no, I'm not okay.
Yes, I was around the same age, super young, you know, and I watched a lot of horror films that were more kind of supernatural or otherworldly. And this was the first one I saw that kind of made that feel real and kind of grounded it in reality. So that terrified me. I kind of watched it and thought like this could actually happen, which was super scary at the time and very memorable.
Oh, definitely. There's something inherently real feeling about so much of this religious horror. But what I find fascinating is that films like The Omen and The Exorcist came with this boom of religious horror and exploitation post, you know, Hays Code. But it's when films were starting to take these giant swings. But at the same time, the Catholic Church still was a lot. It was pretty powerful. And obviously, the church is still powerful today, especially in the States. But we're becoming a more and more secular society, but at the same time, films are becoming a little bit more sanitized. So it feels like The First Omen is coming out in like the inverse of when culturally the original Omen came out. So I'm curious if that impacted your approach to telling this story at all.
Yeah, you know, what's kind of interesting about that is I think that you're right. We are becoming more and more secular as people, but the evil isn't going away.
Mm-hmm. You know?
And so I think it's making us realize that the supernatural elements are really not to blame. They're really just kind of a front man for, you know, the darkness that really just lays in all of our hearts. And I think that was kind of what we wanted to, or how we wanted to approach the Omen, because the devil now is quite fun and sassy, mm-hmm. you know? And so it's, I think, really thinking about the devil being a tool for human beings who are trying to use him in a way to get more control. And it really, like, we were thinking about terror being spiritualized, and the ways people use terror as a weapon against people. And that was really what we were focused on.
Yeah. And I mean, that was a great question. I think, honestly, you know, we try to extrapolate this idea of institutions in power and how they respond to feeling threatened, you know, beyond the Catholic Church, which I think can apply to a lot of what's going on right now. You know, I think, like you said, that film was so good, The Omen in 76, in turning a mirror to the horrors of its time. And we really wanted to do the same with this film. So while the Catholic Church isn't as prominent, I think, you know, institutions in power, how they respond to fear, how they cling to that power when they're under threat, that really resonated with us. And we completely experienced this idea of kind of content being more sanitized. I totally agree. I think right now it's difficult sometimes to push the envelope and kind of get more boundary pushing imagery out there.
Absolutely. And I love that you wanted to speak to sort of these institutions of power, because, you know, I'm a lesbian, so I've been told my entire life that I'm going to burn in hell. And that stops being scary when you hear it so often. But the things that do scare me are these institutions that do have so much power. And I really loved that this film took this very 2024 approach to dismantling institutions, but still allowed it to be a prequel film, be a film set in the 1970s. So when you were developing this story, what was it like to get into the mindset of, you know, this bygone era?
Yeah, you know, it was interesting just because we love 1970s horror so much, and it has such I have so many childhood memories of watching these movies. So there's such a nostalgia baked into it for me.
Mm-hmm.
And we wanted to make people feel safe through that aesthetic, you know, and like trying to recreate that aesthetic as much as we could so that possibly it felt like we had actually shot in the 70s, maybe, you know, but then really contemporarize the film by talking about issues that are really pertinent right now. And I think terrifying, you know, most of the country. Like I think that there's kind of subtle messages that all women should burn in hell is what we're kind of, you know, growing up. And especially if we express our sexuality or embrace our bodies. And so I think that was something that we were really excited to talk about with the film.
Yeah, it was so important to us that the film didn't feel like an artifact of the 1970s, that the horrors that it's speaking to really resonate and feel very pressing and kind of disturbingly familiar. But like Kasia said, we love those films. So the kind of style that those films are made in kind of soaks into our bloodstream in a way, because we've watched so many of those films. So trying to make a film in that style was so much fun, but it had to feel modern in what it was obviously talking about.
Oh, definitely. And I think the visual language of the film also really enhances this point. Two things that I like: I love the costume design in this movie. And when you see, you know, all of these little girls at the orphanage, they are in very like 40s, 50s style dress, but then we have them going out to the disco and it is very clearly the 1970s. So you're definitely showing visually one world that's, you know, clinging to the past and one that is trying to push forward, be progressive, do something. I thought that was really interesting because I think even films in the 70s sometimes forgot that there were also generational, you know, conflicts happening at that time. So I think you did that very, very beautifully. So that wasn't a question. That was just me complimenting you. I hope you were welcome with that compliment.
Thank you so much. Also, I just want to say, like, you're the only person who's picked out kind of the style of the little girls' dresses at the orphanage, because we wanted to kind of create this feeling that they're not really taken care of. You know, they're just hand-me-downs from 10 years.
Totally. And that's exactly how it reads, where it feels like, okay, you're here, but we know there's a different concentration happening with everybody in this system, and it's not taking care of these girls.
Yeah, exactly. Thank you so much. Yeah, and then exactly with the disco, it's like disco in itself was a cultural rebellion, and so it was so exciting to have this little disco moment for it. So thank you for noticing all that.
Yes, you're very welcome. The dress that Margaret wears, I'm obsessed with it. It's so beautiful. But this, you know, there are obviously, you have so many time-honored greats in this film, like Bill Nighy and Charles Dance, Ralph Ineson. You have the Spider-Woman herself, Sonia Braga's here. But then you have this absolute force named Nell Tigerfree. What was the process like in finding her? Because she's, I watched Servant, I know she's great, but for those who may not be familiar with her work, she's phenomenal. So how was finding her?
Yeah, I mean, honestly, it was a wild experience because development lasted for quite a while. And then all of a sudden, 20th said, the film is greenlit, you're going to Rome right now. And we didn't know who we were casting for anything. We didn't really even know if the film was going to happen. And on the plane to Rome, we rewatched Servant and kind of landed in Rome saying, Nell's Margaret. And then we got to talk to her and she was kind enough to do a reading of a scene. And it was one of the more kind of emotionally devastating moments in the film.
Yeah.
And she was unbelievable. And so it was a really seamless process. She just blew us away. She was amazing.
Yeah. She's really fun because she's a very instinctual artist. And so you'll say like, do you have any questions? Do you want to talk about anything? And she'll be like, no, I just want to do it. And that's what she did on this reading, and it was just explosive, and I actually got really teary just because I wasn't expecting such a fireball of emotion to just come out of nowhere. And she can do that, and then she can like take it all back in and then speak to you, you know, as Nell, and then dive right back in. It's a real gift. It's spooky and beautiful to watch all at the same time, you know?
Yeah. I love hearing that she's instinctive, because there's a moment that she has so many outstanding moments in this movie, but there's one in particular where I've been sort of naming it to people as this moment where she goes full Isabel on Johnny in Possession, but standing in one spot. So was that a directorial choice? Were you like, let's bring Possession into this, or was that her instinct?
That's a really great way to distinguish it. She's stationary, and that's the distinction from Possession. Yeah, I like that. Yeah.
We are obsessed with Possession.
Yeah.
I think that is the queen of all female body horror scenes in cinema history. And I think when we first saw it, I cry a lot, but I did burst out crying just because it was so you know, all these things that you feel that you can't articulate, all of a sudden Isabella and Johnny was just expressing them through her body on screen. And so we were thinking about like, what's the climax of this film that is about the female body? And doing a Possession homage just felt really, you know, very natural, very scary to do because it's such a sacred scene. But also I think we were just, you know, there was no control. We were just compelled to do it. And this might've been one of like the most electric moments I think I've ever had on set, is that we had just smashed up that car and then like cleaned up the glass, and then Nell walks onto set and it's 4 a.m. Everybody's tired. This is the like probably the seventh day of shooting. Like people don't really know each other that well. And also people don't really know the film that well and the world that we're in. And she did, I said, do you want music? Do you want this? Do you want to close set? No, I'm just going to do it. And then she did two takes. That's all she did. And each take is about 3 minutes. And she had like all the women on set were like off screen grunting with her. Like she like conjured up some like wild feeling in all the women. And then all the men were really freaked out. And it was just this incredible moment. Sorry, I rambled, but anyway.
Oh, I love that. And if it makes you feel any better, I'm also a crier, and I definitely did cry in this movie. It's specifically when the camera locks in on everyone else as she's saying like, please help me. And they're just staring at her. I was like, all right, this hits in a way that I was not expecting. And I'm just sobbing and I'm hoping everybody in the theater thinks I have allergies. So hope it makes you feel better. I'm also a crier. But something that's really fascinating as you're talking about how she's this actress who can just show up and do it and then suck it back in. I recently attended a Q&A for Immaculate, and apparently Sydney Sweeney's the same way. And so this is just adding to my perfect world of where we're getting these two incredible nunsploitation films at the same time with, you know, obviously there's thematic similarities, but the two things that I hope people understand is that both films have a third act that takes no prisoners, and they have the most fearless performances that people are probably going to see all year. They're unbelievable, both of them. So I love that kismet thing that's happening right there. But back to First Omen, there's also something so delightfully cruel about this movie, and that you're giving the audience a little bit more insight into Father Brennan. Whereas if you know The Omen, you know that he's going to get, you know, really familiar with a lightning rod in just a few years, which, you know, feels especially cruel. But I think that there's a version of this movie where he's the focus, and I think people would make, you know, they would understand that, they'd buy into that. But I think it's so much more interesting that he's not the focus. He's important, but he's not the focus. So what was behind the decision to focus on a new character versus a legacy character?
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, The Omen is so sacred to us as a film. So I think our impulse was to stay away from The Omen because it's such a perfect film. And it was only when we read the script and we realized we were focused on this young novitiate named Margaret, who was a new character, we thought to ourselves, okay, this is obviously going to dovetail with the original because we're telling the origin of Damien, but also it allows us to do our own thing and to follow this unique perspective. You know, the Omen franchise is a very masculine franchise, which is something we've talked about a lot. So to anchor it in this female point of view and Margaret's character kind of gave us a chance to put our own spin on it and to focus on the theme of birth and a lot of themes that are really personal to us. So that was a really important part of signing on and being drawn to the project to begin with.
Yeah. Beautiful. Yeah. I love that, you know, something about religious horror is, especially when you look at things like The Omen or like The Exorcist, any possession films at all, really, there is an inherent body horror to it because it's something inhabiting you without your consent and terrorizing your body from the inside out. And so it is shocking that The Omen is such a masculine franchise because it feels like it has all of the markers of being a feminine franchise. And this movie goes so hard into discussing female autonomy and bodily autonomy, you know, to the point where you showed the miracle of life as a nightmare, which it can be for a lot of people. And you had to be pressed against the MPA who wanted to hit you with the NC-17. So I would love to hear you talk about what that process was like, because once I learned why they were trying to hit you with an NC-17, completely unsurprised, but also very annoyed. And I'm curious if you were just as annoyed.
Yeah, well, obviously very annoyed because we have a lot of gore and a lot of other body horror and a lot of violence in the film.
Yeah, disturbing imagery.
Disturbing imagery. Mm-hmm. I have a jackal penis. Like, it's not disguised. It's a penis, you know? And none of those were NC-17 moments for the ratings board. But what was the birthing clinic. And I think, you know, what's really interesting is that you can't ask them questions. You can't really understand what it is. You just kind of have to kind of fish around and slowly understand what it is that they find offensive. And the key of this movie for us was that it is a movie about, you know, the female body being completely violated inside, outwards. And so you can't make a movie about that nowadays without the imagery. I just think it's a bit unethical to hide from the imagery with that. So the shot of the vagina was extremely important to all of us. And what it was originally was just this frontal shot of the vagina, and then a hand emerges. And what we slowly discovered was that it wasn't the hand emerging from the vagina that the board found offensive. It was the moment before when we were just showing the vagina. And it was so counter to the theme of this for us because, you know, the horror in the scene is about what is being done to the female body. Like you saying, you know, the miracle of life can be a nightmare. And it's like, it can be if you're forced into it, you know, and you're strapped down like these women. But we never wanted to say like the actual female body is grotesque ever. And that was what it felt like the ratings board was saying to us with those. So we ended up having to go to this profile, which in addition to the frontal shot, which for me just seemed even more violent and graphic, but sorry, that's the story.
Thank you so much for sharing it, because it is one of those things where I think we talk a lot about how, you know, American censors have no problem with violence, but they're all hung up on sexuality. And in this instance, it's not even sexuality. It's just anatomy. Like, this is the same visual you would get in a textbook that they're having an issue with. And that, I think, really speaks to, you know, our culture, our censorship rules and regulations that we have, where you can't even show the actual body part. That's so wild to me. I mean, most people can't even say the word vagina. They'll come up with something cute and weird for it, which is frustrating.
That has been a big journey for us, is yeah, having men say the word vagina without blinking an eye. Yeah. It's been a real, like, you know, it's been very empowering.
We can spend like a whole scroll with the different term, the evasive terminology.
So I have time for one last question for you. And so all I want to know is, how do you hope people feel when they leave the theater after having watched The First Omen?
Yeah, I think, you know, it was really important for us to not piss off horror fans and not piss off woman fans. So, but we also wanted to make something that could kind of stand on its own, you know, and reinvigorate people back to the franchise as well. So I really encourage everybody to have a really good time with this movie and then also visit the Donner film.
And I mean, you know, we try to take a lot of big swings. We try, like I said, to speak to horrors that are really personal to us. So hopefully people see it and respond to us trying to push the envelope. And I hope they do see it in theaters, because we worked really, really hard to make it a theatrical experience. And I think that's the way it's best enjoyed, is going to see it with a big group of people.
We have 35mm prints, y'all. So.
Yeah. And I agree completely. Getting to see it in a fully packed theater last week was exactly the environment that I needed to be in to see it. Awesome. So congratulations on this film. And thank you so much again for talking with me.
Thanks for taking the time. Thank you.
All right, BJ, before we go, I just wanted to ask you one final question. Where does The First Omen rank for you in this franchise? It sounds like you're not really in love with any of the sequels or the remake, but how would you stack it up to the original? Like, is this one of those rare cases where you're like, I don't know, it might be better? What do you think?
I don't know if it can be better, because like the original Omen is just such a perfect film, but it's easily my number two. And then there's like five stories before we get to the rest of the films.
Okay.
So like, this is definitely up there, but I don't know, depending on my mood and, you know, ask me in like 5 years from now, it might be up there.
Okay, excellent. Well, I think that's going to do it for today's episode of the show. You can find much more about The First Omen, including our full review of the movie, which I'm going to link to in the show notes, at slashfilm.com. Slash Film Daily is published every weekday, bringing you the most exciting news from the world of movies and TV, as well as deeper dives into the great features you can find on the site. You can subscribe to the show on Apple, Overcast, Spotify, wherever you get your podcasts. Send your feedback, questions, comments, concerns, and mailbag topics to us at bpearson@slashfilm.com. Make sure to leave your name and general geographic location in case we mention your email on the air. Don't forget to take a minute to rate and review the show on Apple Podcasts or Spotify. That really does help us out a lot. Tell your friends about the show any way you can. Thanks so much for listening, and we will talk to you on Monday.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.